What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Bronx Beat. My name is Ryan Garcia. I'm joined, as always, by Gary Phillips, beat writer for the New York Daily News, covering the New York Yankees. Gary, it actually hasn't been that eventful of a week. There is a big baseball tournament coming up in the World Baseball Classic this today, actually. I think it begins for the U.S. and DR. It already started a couple days ago, but yeah, it's been a relatively quiet day in Yankee camp and Yankee world. But how have you been doing, man?
I've been doing all right. It's a nice timing for a little bit of quietness in Yankees world. I'm actually back down in Florida, but not in Tampa for spring training. I'm in Orlando for a buddy's bachelor party. Still coming, you know, still bring the Bronx Beat to you guys, but nice timing for a little quiet week.
Yeah, I think it's, again, just like good timing. The weather's actually cleaning up a little bit here in New York. The rain kind of washed away all the snow, so I can actually drive without hitting an icy curb or something, whatever it may be. Now, one of the storylines that were actually somewhat like notable from this past week was the New York Yankees played the Red Sox in Fort Myers, and Luis Gil got the start. And this was probably his most encouraging spring training start. He struck out six. He did issue two walks, but he was pretty effective, pretty sharp, and the fastball velocity was up, sitting around 96 miles per hour, 95 and a half to 96. You did a story on Luis Gil and his fastball velocity. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you learned from talking to Luis Gil, talking to people around the organization about his spring training and why his velo's been maybe a little bit slow?
Yeah, so if you've been paying attention to Luis Gil this spring, you've noticed in his first two starts that the velocity was not there. Like, we're talking averaging, topping out around 94, 96 miles an hour, averaging 94 miles an hour, topping out at 96. And that's just not where he was 2 years ago when he was Rookie of the Year, right? Like, he was averaging almost 97 miles an hour. He was throwing harder than that pretty often. It let him be this effectively wild pitcher that was, you know, good enough to start almost 30 games, had about a 350 ERA. He was a mainstay in the Yankees rotation. He comes back last year from the lat injury, and the velocity is not there. There were times, he said, where he was kind of stepping off of the gas and trying to take a little zip off the fastball to find the strike zone. Even when he was kind of maxing out, the velocity still just wasn't there. So when he gets to camp in the first few starts, you don't see that velocity again. You start to at least notice it. I wouldn't say we got to the point maybe where we were worried. And even Aaron Boone said, going back to his lives before spring training started, it was like, okay, it was a little bit underwhelming, but the Yankees are going to trust that as he continues to build, as he continues to ramp up, as he continues to get reps in games against other hitters, like, the velocity will come. So we saw a little bit of that against the Red Sox the other day. I'm not going to say he was throwing a staggering amount of heat. He had four pitches that were 97 miles per hour or higher, but topped out at 97.9. I'd say that's an encouraging sign, or at least it fits what the Yankees have been telling us, that, hey, with time, with buildup, the velocity will increase. So we saw a little bit of that the other day.
Yeah, and I do think it's important for people to note that sometimes some guys this time of year just are throwing a little bit slower, but for Luis Gil, there is something for him to prove. Like, I don't think he has more than a month or maybe even a month and a half to kind of establish himself as clearly better than Warren and clearly better than Weathers, because Rodon and Cole are expected to come back at some point in May or June with Cole, and for Rodon, maybe closer to late April, early May. I mean, that's still up in the air. We won't really know when they're going to be back exactly, but they're not expected to be back in the second half. They're expected to be back in the first half, so there isn't as much runway to get himself established. Do you think there's more velo for him to find, and do you think that there is going to be a lot of pressure on him this spring training and early in the regular season?
I think there's more velo for him to find, just in the sense that we've seen it from him in the past. Now, after being heavily used in 2024, after dealing with the injury last year, like, is it still there? Will he be throwing, you know, 97, 98 consistently? I'm not sure. Does he need to necessarily as he moves forward? I'm not sure. You know, we've seen pitchers, particularly on the Yankees the last couple of years, adapt a little bit, pitch to more contact, you know, work more in the zone, work more with their secondary stuff. That wouldn't be an approach That hurts Louis Seal, especially if he still can ramp it up to 97 every once in a while. I do think he's, you know, at his best, or his arsenal is at its best when he can really hit those high 90s with regularity. But yeah, like you alluded to, there is a little bit of, I don't know if it's pressure on him, but this is an important season for Heal. You know, he really hasn't shown that he can be trusted in those big games, you know, particularly the postseason. He hasn't shown that, you know, he can maintain his stuff as the year goes on. We saw that in 2024, and then we also saw him struggle when he came back from the lat injury last year. I know the surface numbers weren't terrible, but like if you look at his metrics and you watched the games last season, it was always like, hey, where's the guy from 2024? Where's the rookie of the year? He didn't look like that pitcher. So he's going to be in the opening day rotation right now. Like, that's the plan that the Yankees have. But what does happen if they get healthy all at the same time and some guys start coming back? Like, I don't know that he's ahead of Will Warren or Ryan Weathers on the depth chart. In fact, I would probably say that he's not. So do you slot him into the bullpen down the road? Do you send him to AAA and have him keep working as a starter because he's got an option? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the outlook looks like for Louis Heal, even if he's having a really good season. I think the Yankees believe he is capable of doing what he did in 2024. I think, you know, Boone thinks he's capable of dominating like an ace. That was something that he said earlier this spring. But he's got to show it, and he's got to do it in a bit of a timely manner also.
Yeah, and to kind of provide some statistical notes to support the argument you're making about the fastball and the quality of the fastball not being there as it was in previous years, in 2024, he had a 28.5% whiff rate. That's just measuring swing and miss rate. And in 2025, it was 18.8%. Fastball velocity went from 96.6 miles per hour to 95.3 miles per hour. So that's a pretty staggering decrease in fastball effectiveness, in fastball quality. He's going to have to get these things back on track in order to be a quality starter. Now, my last question here about Luis, I wanted to ask you, Gary, before we wrap this topic up, is in the situation where the Yankees do have a surplus of starting pitching and Heal is kind of on the outside looking in, do you believe the Yankees would consider him in a bullpen role, or do you think they would option him to AAA to keep him as rotation depth?
I'm really not sure. I think it depends on what does the rotation depth look like, what does Luis Heal look like, what does the bullpen look like? Now, this conversation's come up with Heal the last two seasons as well for various reasons, whether it be his workload at the end of 2024, whether it be the state of the Yankees' rotation at the end of last season when he came back from the lat injury and going into the postseason, and like they haven't done it. I think part of that probably has to do with his command. Like, he is just, when he's good, he's going to be effectively wild, right? And when he's bad, he's just going to be wild. Like, that's part of the reason why the velocity is so important for him, because he needs to be able to generate some swing and miss with the heater, because he's just not a guy that's going to be in the zone all that much. We saw it work for him in 2024 when he was lighting the radar gun up. Last year, not so much. So as for what does actually happen with him down the road, it's going to depend on a lot of factors that we just don't know at this moment.
Yeah, and I think it's also going to rely on the idea of having a surplus, which is going to be something that we talk about multiple times as that's ideal, but doesn't always come to fruition. These things tend to sort themselves out. I do think it'll be fascinating to follow the rotation to bullpen pipeline if there is one, because you can make a real argument that, hey, just keep the guy built up. You never know if you have an injury in a week or two, just in case you need to press that button. I'm curious. I think it'll be a fascinating player to follow throughout spring and throughout the start of the regular season. Any final notes on Luis Heal before we move on?
The only other thing I would say is, like, we're talking about this, you know, his velocity, and I know like some other people and Yankee fans have been worried about it a little bit. Like, he is still only three starts into spring training. There is still some time for him to continue ramping up, continue building up. I know Yankees fans are seeing Carlos Legrande throw 103, and they're watching Ryan Weathers, you know, throw career high fastball velocity at 99 miles an hour. Like, not every guy is sprinting out of the gate at this time of year. So let's just continue to monitor it, see where things go. I wouldn't say panic just yet if, you know, Heal is not throwing is not averaging 97, you know, for the rest of spring.
Yeah, and to kind of give a couple of examples here, because I just remember being on social media while this was going on. Carlos Rodon in 2024, I believe it was, and Nestor Cortez as well, like their fastball velocities were significantly lower than where it was at the time of the regular season. Luke Weaver, even at that point, was sitting 93.2. That fastball velocity would shoot up a couple of ticks. So it's just the time of year we're in. These things can change kind of on a dime, and we can see guys pick up some velocity, maybe even lose velocity. Sometimes, like for LeGrand, hey, he's pitching in 30 to 40 pitch stretches in an 80 to 90 pitch start. Maybe the velocity comes down. So I think it's something where the regular season will kind of really give me a red button to press to panic on. But a couple of quick injury updates, and Gary will get your thoughts on these. Cam Schlittler and Oswaldo Cabrera will make their Grapefruit League debuts today on Friday. If you're listening to this after the fact, then, well, yeah, it was on Friday. Cam Schlittler is on the mound, Oswaldo Cabrera at shortstop. Gary, what does this mean for their timelines and their potential availability for opening day?
Yeah, so as far as Schlittler goes, like, Boone, even before his start was announced tonight, like, said that basically he expects Schlittler to be ready for the start of the season. Probably isn't going to be built up to 80, 90 pitches, but, well, Boone essentially said, like, I will take 70 pitches of Cam Schlittler over something else. So as long as all continues to go well for him, that's kind of the status quo with Schlittler. Like, as of now, he should be expected to be in that season opening rotation. Boone was asked, you know, hey, you guys have a bunch of off days early on in the schedule. Can't you take it slow with Schlittler and, you know, ease him along a little bit? The Yankees have said from the get-go, like, the lat back issue that he had wasn't all that serious. And essentially that, no, they want to have Cam Schlittler ready to go when the season begins. So that's what the plan looks like right now.
I was going to say with Cam real quick that I think Boone mentioned, like, I'd rather have 75 pitches of Cam in the big leagues than not. And, like, I'd have to agree for this rotation. I don't think they can sustain another injury right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're talking about that or having a Ryan Yarbrough or Paul Blackburn type in the season opening rotation. And Boone even talked about the possibility of, okay, maybe we need to piggyback with Schlittler and one of those two swingmen. And he essentially said, like, yeah, sign me up for that. Like, I'd rather have Cam in the rotation than not in the rotation, which I also agree with.
And I think, again, with Schlittler, I mean, he was awesome at the end of last year. I think if you look at, like, wins above replacement, FIP, ERA from August onward, not even including the postseason, he was their best starting pitcher. That is a seriously impactful arm to not have if you were to miss any time. And you hope that if you're the Yankees, at least for their sake, that he's ready to go on opening day and looks the way he should. Now, with Oswaldo at short, I know we've been talking about this for a bit where at least you had mentioned it's not 100% that he's going to be ready for opening day. And that created a lot of interesting bench kind of possibilities for the Yankees. Do you still wonder about his availability for opening day? And is this start at shortstop going to be a pretty important thing to watch throughout spring?
I think it's too soon to know if he is going to be ready for opening day. You know, Boone has repeatedly hinted at, you know, maybe he won't be. Even with him being at shortstop today, you know, something to keep an eye on is his mobility, how fast he's running, how easily he's moving. Just last week when Boone was talking about potentially getting Cabrera in a game, he said, and we're still looking to see that last burst of speed from him, right? So is he comfy out there? Is he moving well? I think it's notable that he's playing shortstop because that position from a backup standpoint is still very much up in the air after the Ryan McMahon experiment didn't look too clean this week, right? So, like, there's still some intrigue there. But I would also, at this point, like, it's March 6th. Talking about March 25th opening day, Cabrera being ready, I think the Yankees like for their players to have a little more ramp-up time. So I would lean he's not going to be on the opening day roster at this point. But hey, if he looks really good today, if he's able to play back-to-back days relatively soon and the mobility is there, the burst is there, the speed is there, then yeah, why not?
And it'll also be interesting because, again, there's this just ongoing debate that isn't, I don't think there's a really a right or wrong answer necessarily, but I think there are fascinating arguments for both, which is backup shortstop or backup catcher. Like, what you want, a Scarer, or do you want a backup shortstop on the roster? I think it's going to be fascinating to see what decision they end up making, because, I mean, there's real limitations to your roster if you don't have a backup shortstop. There are real limitations to your roster if Rice is your backup catcher. Any final notes on Cabrera, the bench, any of those kinds of things?
Yeah, I mean, right, they wanted to see what McMahon looked like at short so that they could avoid having to make that choice. Looks like they're still going to have to make that choice right now.
Yeah, again, it's just, it is going to be interesting to monitor. I'm fascinated to see what this bench ends up looking like and where they end up aligning certain, where they end up believing they need the most coverage on their bench, I guess is the best way to put it. Now, we're going to shift gears a little bit, and Gary, I'm not going to lie, I had no idea what this was. When I first saw you tweet about Whoop, I was like, is that like a, it's like a financial thing? Is this like, I was super confused. But a lot of players seem to be using this to, I guess, monitor their sleep and like heart rate. It seems to be a monitoring app, and I'm curious as to what this is. But let's start with how this story even came about. Gary, how did you find out about this Whoop?
Yeah, so Whoop is, like you said, it's, you know, typically a little wristband. There are some other wearable devices that athletes and just regular people as well use to monitor their sleep, monitor their recovery, their heart rate. There's a whole other bunch of things that you could track for this, but for the Yankees, they're typically using it to monitor their sleep and their recovery from workouts, game days, starts, things like that. So this first got on my radar last year in the playoffs, actually, and between all the trash talking that Cam Schlittler was doing at Red Sox fans and, you know, that great start he had in the wild card series, he said, you know, I got my best two nights of sleep going into that game. And it was something that he said in the post-game press conference after that wild card game. It's like, oh, okay, that's, sure, that makes sense. Good night's sleep, good performance, sure, you go in feeling good. But then he said, I got a 96, you know, two nights ago and a 93 last night. And I'm like, what does that even mean? So he mentioned it a few more times when we were in Toronto during the workout day in the playoffs and, you know, just some other casual conversations I had with him. And I'm like, okay, like, what are you referring to? And it was this wristband, or he wears actually a shoulder sleeve, that basically you sign up for a subscription with Whoop. He got it gifted to him by his agency, and they send you a wearable device. It comes with a subscription to the app. And yeah, basically, like, it lets you know, like, is your sleep in the red, you know, that's bad, yellow, moderate, green, really good. And what Schlittler found was that, you know, he was making some changes to his sleep routine that was leading to better rest. It was leading to better recovery. Now, I'm sure some of it is a little bit mental, right? Like, if you know you slept really, really good going into a start day, then, you know, you get a little extra confidence boost going into that game. So talked to him a little bit about it. He mentioned that some other guys in the clubhouse were wearing it or had worn it in the past. Aaron Boone, Ben Hess, Clark Schmidt said he really got into it when his Tommy John rehab began. You know, he wanted to make sure he was getting the best sleep possible because that was going to lead to the best recovery possible for his surgically repaired elbow. So that was interesting. Ben Hess said he's messed around with it over the years, but now he's really back into it because he's got a baby at home. He wants to make sure he's sleeping well going into his start days and stuff like that. So I just thought it was interesting, you know, hey, it's not necessarily new tech. Like, Whoop's been around for a few years now, but certainly something that I've seen more and more of in the Yankees clubhouse since I started paying attention to it last October. You know, there's plenty of pictures of Boone where you could see the little black wristband on one wrist. He's got a watch on the other. Other athletes like LeBron have used this. Patrick Mahomes. There was even an issue with the White House a couple days ago because one of I believe it was Trump's chief of staff was seen wearing it during what was supposed to be attack planning meetings. Like, and they actually thought it was a smartwatch. Now, the Whoops do not have GPS or microphones or recording, you know, the capability to record or anything like that. So I guess it was a false alarm. But yeah, basically just like a look at some tech that has made its way into the Yankees clubhouse. Interesting enough, Whoop is a Fenway area-based company, so a little Boston Red Sox tinge there. Obviously, Schlittler being from that area as well. Like, make sense. Like, he would have the device, or it would be on his radar. But yeah, kind of like, I believe their offices have a overlook of Fenway Park, which I thought was funny.
So they, I just, that's hilarious overlap. I think I can't even, there's a lot here. So first and foremost, the Fenway aspect of it's hilarious. I think that's funny. Then with Ben Hess talking about, like, now he has a baby at home monitoring sleep. I was a notoriously very loud and disruptive baby. So I think my parents may have benefited from having this when I was just a wee child. And then I think this is cool. I think this is pretty cool. Like, I mean, I don't have any, like, those sleep monitoring, sleep score stuff. I've always been like, I look into it, whatever. But this is, I think this is sick. I think this is awesome. I have a couple of questions about, is this like a thing where guys are being competitive about it? Are they like comparing scores and like, hey, my score's better than yours today? Or is it like just a, I'm curious how it like ties into the organization here.
It sounds like they're more competing with each other. Like Boone said, he's gotten a little addicted to checking his scores. Like, I think they all want to be getting the best sleep possible, right? Like, so I think they're trying to boost their own averages. They're trying to top what they did the night before. If they're a pitcher, they're trying to top what they did the night before their previous start going into a new one. Although some guys, including Ben Hess, was like, I won't look at it the morning of a start day because it tells me I got, you know, lesser sleep or bad sleep. I don't want to go into the game thinking like, oh, didn't sleep well, gonna pitch like shit now. So I thought that mental aspect of it was interesting. There are some other products like this. Aaron Judge said that he used the Aura Ring as well. He's also used Whoop. He doesn't use anything anymore. Basically, he like got what he needed out of it, and it helped him develop a routine. So he's no longer really leaning on the devices to tell him what to do. But I think that's the goal for everybody. It's like to improve their routine. From what I understand, Whoop will make recommendations on things you can change, things you can improve. It will tell you if you are not getting enough sleep after a strenuous day or going into what's going to be a strenuous day. So I think it's all for their own like personal benefit and improvement, not so much like I'm going to beat your score or I'm going to do this better than you do that. Because like they all have different bodies, right? Like if you're looking at it more from the recovery and the training standpoint, like they're not going to get, you know, the same scores under the same conditions, essentially.
Yeah, totally fair. I mean, some days it's just not like sleep's just not going to happen the way you want it to. Like that's just life. I think it's fascinating. Any final thoughts you have on it?
You know, hearing all the guys talk about it, I thought like, oh, like maybe this would be a good thing for me to have. But as a beat writer and a night owl and somebody who doesn't particularly consider themselves a morning person, like I'm not going to get good scores anyway. So probably not worth the subscription investment.
I might have to look into this. My sleep is horrible. I'm trying to sleep better.
It's not just going to make your sleep better. Like you have to do things to improve
those scores.
Yeah, but
it'll make me feel bad. Make me feel bad about my bad sleep scores. I'm going to be seeing that Cam Schlettler's got like a 90 whatever. I'm like, dude, I'm rocking 50s here. Like,
yeah, and that was one of the things that Hess said, a couple other guys said. It's like it keeps them accountable. It keeps them on routine. I don't really have a life that like allows for that kind of routine, but like all the power to those guys.
Yeah, totally fair. I mean, again, I think this is fascinating. I think it's sick. You did also do another story on that was player related, and it was in regard to Cody Bellinger and Aaron Judge talking about the upcoming labor negotiations, the Dodgers spending, and their thoughts on it. And Bellinger and Judge, Bellinger being a former Dodger, were very pro, like, hey, this is great. I love what the Dodgers are doing. Can you talk a little bit about what they told you in regards to the Dodgers spending in general and why players have come out in droves and said these kinds of things?
Yeah, I mean, first off, it shouldn't be a surprise that players are in favor of a team that has the highest payroll in baseball. Like, players want teams to spend money on players, right? They want high salaries, they want long contracts, like they want all the teams to do this or have at least this approach. So the reason that, you know, me and also Chris Kirshner over at The Athletic asked a bunch of Yankees about this is because at the start of spring training, Bryce Harper of the Phillies and Manny Machado of the Padres, like they had some pretty emphatic quotes on the Dodgers spending that was supportive of it. Machado said, I fucking love what they're doing, right? Like, you know, he's MLB's first $300 million free agent. Of course he is in favor of the team that's spending the most money. But it is still an important, even if it's an obvious topic, it's important because this is all under the back, you know, the context of this labor fight that is going on in Major League Baseball and could potentially contribute to a lockout next season. Now, I don't even want to say potentially at this point. Like, Bruce Meyer, the interim director of the MLBPA, has already said like he would be stunned or shocked if there's not a lockout next year, which I think is kind of how the entire baseball world is feeling. And at the center of that fight is this issue of a salary cap. It's something that the owners are pushing for once again. The players are going to reject it and oppose it once again, just as they always have. That they're going to say, baseball is, has as much parity or more parity than any other sport. Team valuations are sky high. People are watching. People are attending games. Like, there's a lot of money in baseball. So, no, not surprising at all to hear guys like Judge, Cody Bellinger, Gerrit Cole, Giancarlo Stanton, Machado, Harper. You look at guys across the league, and it's not surprising to hear them say that, yes, we are in favor of this. We want to see more teams doing this. I know, obviously, not every team is going to be able to spend $400 million like the Dodgers, but Bellinger kind of made the point that a lot of teams can be spending more. There's 11 teams with CBT payrolls that are projected to be under $150 million this season. Like, I think those teams could probably do more. Bellinger made the case like, if I own a baseball team, I'm pretty wealthy. His quote was, you don't get them at the dollar store, right? So like, I think players want to see more teams at least raising the bar. I don't think a cap solves that. I think, maybe a floor theoretically combined with a cap theoretically could make some sense. But again, look at how many teams are under 150 right now. Like, I'm not sure you could get all the owners to agree on a floor. So I know fans are throwing that combination out there, and Hal Steinbrenner has even said his support for a cap is conditional on a floor. I'm not sure you're going to get all the owners to agree to a floor. Or at least not a floor that the majority of fans and players would consider, sensible or fair or logical, right? Like, if you say the floor is $100 million, then the players' union is not agreeing to that. I don't think the players' union is going to agree to any sort of cap structure right now. I don't see why they would. They never have. The game is, booming from a interest and fan perspective and monetarily. So I don't see why they would. But I think Bellinger kind of made that clear. He said that we shouldn't change the game just because one team did the right thing for a while, and he's obviously referring to the Dodgers there.
Yeah, and I also think that it completely wipes away the context of all the teams doing the wrong thing. And I know Bellinger isn't going to call out a specific team. Like, he's still a part of this game, but like Cleveland, the Guardians have an $82 million payroll. It's the second lowest in MLB. They did not make any significant additions to their roster. This team won their division last year. They're in an incredibly weak American League Central. Well, all it takes is being a quality roster to go on a run and go win a World Series, in my opinion.
Well, I didn't like, I was trying to think of ways to work it in there and into the story, and I didn't, but I wanted to draw this contrast between just the Dodgers and the Angels, right? Like, you talk about a team that could do more. Like, let's look at that from a broader sense than just player payroll. That the Angels aren't broadcasting their spring training games. The Angels don't have radar guns in their bullpens. I mean, it's fucking absurd, to be honest with you. And then to contrast them with the other team in their market, the Dodgers, like, the Angels are in a big market. The Angels have money. We've seen them spend money in the past, and they can't do things like broadcast their games and have velocity readings in spring training. Like, it's insane. So, I think there were a couple guys, including Stanton and Manny Machado, who were like, any team can do what the Dodgers are doing. And I think that's an exaggeration and a bit of a stretch, but Bellinger was trying to make the point that, like, there's definitely teams that can be doing more. More for player payroll, more for their fans, more for the product on the field. Like, yes, I think that's absolutely fair and true and something that players and fans should expect and, frankly, demand on the player side going into these negotiations.
Yeah, and I think one big aspect of it, you mentioned with the Angels, they had a chance to match. Like, Ohtani presented them the opportunity to match the offer the Dodgers made. It is not clear whether he would have returned or not, but this was after not trading him at the trade deadline that same year. They didn't trade him. They didn't match the offer that I think is a completely reasonable offer if you're getting Shohei Ohtani. He makes teams incredibly wealthy. Like, that's a bigger problem than, yes, there is a there's a competitive balance between being the Dodgers and being the Reds. The Reds cannot spend at the rate the Dodgers can. I don't think we have to ignore that fact to make the argument that the Reds probably don't try enough. The Guardians don't try enough. The Angels don't try enough. I go down the list of teams that don't try enough, don't care about fan experience, don't care about parity. They just want a cap so they can suppress player salaries while remaining, well, providing the illusion that this is for parity. I don't see where a cap and floor is going to cause these teams to try. You know what I mean?
Another great thing that Bellinger alluded to and Gerrit Cole also alluded to, and I wrote about this earlier in the offseason from a Yankees perspective, is that the Dodgers aren't just buying up every single free agent. Like, I know they've kind of gotten this, you know, Yankee, you know, early 2000s Yankee adjacent evil empire reputation, but the Dodgers draft, scout, and develop really well. Like, they've used young talent to either supplement their pricey stars or acquire other ones. They have gotten a lot of bang for their buck despite their outsized spending. If you look at it, you know, through a war per dollars perspective, they have one of the largest baseball operations, I actually believe the largest baseball operations department in the majors, last I checked. So, like, it's not just, ooh, we're dumping a lot of money into our payroll and then we go win World Series. They have depth. They do player development really well. They draft really well, despite, you know, typically not being, you know, a high drafting team. Like, Bellinger called them a well-oiled machine, and Cole said they're maximizing their efficiency. And, like, yes, it helps to have the money. It helps to have the influx of cash that they get from Japan, but they do other things well besides just spend.
And to kind of add on to that point, I know you mentioned, you know, it isn't just the money. In 2023, so this is 2 years ago, the highest payroll in baseball was the Mets. The second highest payroll in baseball was the Yankees. The third highest payroll was the Padres. Those three teams all missed the postseason. Dodgers, Blue Jays, neither team won a playoff game that year. Phillies were sixth, and they went to the NLCS. The top five payrolls in baseball did not win a playoff game in 2023. Yeah, go ahead.
I believe Bruce Meyer had a quote yesterday I saw come out of Yankees camp. I think Newsday's Eric Bolin tweeted out. It's like, he was saying, you'd be much better off being a Cleveland Guardians fan over the last X amount of years than you would be being a Cleveland Browns fan over the last X amount of years, right? And, like, the Guardians don't have a cap. The Browns do have a cap. So, like, is a cap making the team better? Is a cap making more parity in the league? Like, I don't see the evidence of that.
As a former Cleveland Browns fan, that team, I mean, it is certainly an experience. Like, it's certainly an experience of, at one point, said I was a Cleveland Browns fan. Like, that was, I think I experienced the best years of being a Cleveland Browns fan. They went to the postseason. They beat the Steelers in a playoff game. That's, like, the peak of being a Browns fan. It'll never get higher than that.
Were the New York football teams not garbage enough for you that you had to sink even lower and become a Cleveland Browns fan?
I got into football when the Giants had that playoff appearance where the boating trip and they lose to the Packers. Like, I was like, oh, that's bandwagoning if I joined them. And, you know, I didn't choose the Jets because I was like, my dad's a Giants fan. I can't be a Jets fan. It's a little awkward. So I was like, I'll pick the worst team in the league. And the Browns went 0-16. So I was like, that's a pretty good pick if I wanted to pick the worst team in the league. That's how that ended up. And then they traded for someone that I think we can both agree You know, that's how I ended up not being a Browns fan anymore. There was a
gotcha.
that trade. Just example of why being a Cleveland Browns fan is just the worst experience you could possibly give to yourself as a sports fan, arguably. But again, in this cap floor systems, even if you want to look at like the NBA, I mean, let's be frank. Do the Charlotte Hornets ever have a chance of attracting a superstar? Do the, I don't know. I mean, the Orlando Magic have been relatively competitive. They can't draw on a superstar because it's still geography matters, organizational reputation, franchise history. The Lakers got LeBron James after being absolutely garbage for like a decade. Like this is going to happen in any sport. If you put a cap floor system, you're just going to have guys still going to LA, still going to New York, still going to wherever. Like geography matters. There's so many other variables that go beyond just salary and go beyond just, oh, well, there's a not a cap or not a floor. So that's why there's no competitive balance. There are teams that are not trying. There are teams that could try more. There are teams that spend a lot on internal development. There isn't a cap on how much you can spend on your front office as well. So you can theoretically put as much money as you possibly want there. And I do not believe it gets counted towards your CBT. So you don't even get taxed on that in terms of competitive balance stuff. Like teams could try more. I'm not saying everyone could do what the Dodgers are doing. That's objectively not true. But teams could try more. And I think that's something players are going to hammer throughout the course of this lockout battle that's looming.
The other thing that I want to point out here is that, you know, as the days go by and we get closer and closer to the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement, is that, you know, there are certain factions within the two sides that are battling here, right? Like there's factions among players. They're really wealthy. The guys with lots of service time, the guys making less money, the guys with less service time, and there's even factions within the ownership group. But like, typically, these groups vote as a block. And what I mean by that is, you know, you're going to get almost every owner to vote in favor of whatever the owner's policy, you know, or proposal ends up being. You know, maybe the Dodgers and Steve Cohen say, you know, screw a cap. I don't want a cap. Like, you know, money is our superpower. Like, we want to be able to keep using it. But even that, like that, even that might not happen, right? Like, theoretically, money and the ability to spend is a superpower for the Yankees and Hal Steinbrenner. And it's one that he has used, right? He's got a $300 million plus payroll for the third straight season. But you've seen him say, I'm in favor of a cap if there is a floor. So, like, that's, for lack of a better word or phrase, like falling in line with the desires of other owners, at least when it comes to the cap. Again, I'm skeptical that enough owners and ownership groups actually want a floor, but you know, if that is the best proposal that the owners come up with or what they can agree on and propose, like, yes, I think you would see owners who may not want a floor fall in line and vote to approve that. So I'm sure Yankee fans are going to be, you know, if they're not already aware of Steinbrenner's comments on this stuff, like, I'm sure they're going to say, like, oh, how could he support a cap? You know, how could he take that, you know, that power away from himself and away from the Yankees? And, oh, he doesn't care about this and this. Like, the owners are going to vote as a block for the most part, that they're a club, right? Like, they're the rich guy club, right? They're going to do what's in their collective group's best interest.
Yeah. And my final note that I'll add on here is a quote from Steve Cohen. This was, I believe, in the same media availability where he discussed the Mets never having a captain under his tenure, which means this was fairly recent. I think this was in February. Obviously, I'm listening to all arguments, but I've always been a league first owner, so I'm listening to all sides and I haven't made up my mind yet. We'll see where it goes. Sometimes I put the league's interest above my own interest. This was in regard to a salary cap. That is the richest owner in baseball. That is the guy who, outside of the Dodgers, most benefits from not having a cap. That tells you where owners are.
In other words, if this is what everybody else, you know, in the club that I was voted access into once, then okay, I'm going to fall in line and this is what I'm going to vote for. Like that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It's going to be a fascinating labor battle of view. And I think it's truly kind of disheartening that baseball is kind of soaring right now. The World Baseball Classic, I mean, I saw, I think it was Bad Bunny and Timothy Chalamet are both in Japan to watch the World Baseball Classic, traveling across the country to go watch the World Baseball Classic. Baseball swung right now, and we're going to have a labor battle, and it's going to be because of very, 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 I think, stupid financial reasons. But it is what it is. Gary, any final thoughts you have on the salary cap and just Yankees media world stuff in general?
No, just that, like, I think I've said it on the pod before, like, it's not a topic that I'm super excited to write about. It's not something that I'm looking forward to, because, like, I am of the mindset that this work stoppage is coming. How long it lasts, I don't know. I think there is certainly potential there for it to be a lengthy one. So, like, it's not an exciting or fun topic for me. It is a story. I think I've said that before. Like, this is going to be a thing to talk about, for me to write about and cover, like, all season, going into the off season. You know, that CBA is going to expire on December 1st without a new agreement in place. So, like, you know, at least that is, like, the 99 percentile assumption. Yeah, like, this is, you know, this is something that's going to be hanging over the game all season. And I agree, the timing sucks, because I also think baseball is soaring.
Yeah, and you know, on the same note, World Baseball Classic action will continue today. Japan just opened up their portion of the tournament. They run ruled, I believe it's Taiwan, they run ruled, yeah, 13-0. And I think Australia's gotten off to a 2-0 start. Panama and Cuba play, Netherlands and Venezuela, Mexico and Great Britain, Puerto Rico, Colombia, the Dominican Republic and Nicaragua. Our start for an undefeated run begins. The USA versus Brazil, and Taiwan plays again today against Czechoslovakia. I guess it's a different time zone, so, you know, I don't know if that's actually a same day type stuff. But that is a pretty quick turnover. Go get run ruled and have to play not too far after. That's kind of brutal.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I have not, just being away the last couple days, I have not had a chance to check out the start of the tournament. I'm hoping to change that today, but I am very excited for the World Baseball Classic. I do love the tournament, and, you know, definitely looking forward to seeing some of the better teams go at each other.
Yeah, again, I mean, it's this. We're in the stage of the tournament where some teams that, you know, we'll see some guys back in camp on next week type stuff in terms of some of the team quality. I don't expect it to be to see the Yankees without Jazz for long. Is essentially what I'm saying. That's just in the stage of the tournament we're in. We got some guys throwing 89, which is sick to see, but not going to last very long in the tournament. Super, super fun stuff going on there. Gary, any final notes before we wrap this thing up?
I think Jazz will be back at Yankee camp before I am.
Sorry. There's a good chance of that. You know, I was going to say the same thing about Panama, but I'm actually not sure. Their pool's, like, way more open. And they have big leaguers. I think they could squeeze 3 wins out. And baseball's a high-variance sport anyways. Like, there's a chance if you play a team that's only slightly better than you that you just wallop them. We appreciate you guys listening here and tuning into the Bronx Beat once again. If this is your first time listening, thank you. And there is a catalog of episodes you can check out in the playlist that this video is in. You can check out Gary's work in the links in the description below. There is a link to his New York Daily News page, and there are a link to the articles that we discussed, from Luis Heel to Whoop to the upcoming labor battle and Bellinger and Judge's comments on the Dodgers spending. Like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell, check us out on social media, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody. Perfect.